Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, the 26th of January, meaning we're going to wrap up another month.
Yes, yeah, it's the last week.
Yeah, last week of January.
Last week, that went quick. And you know what? Something very special. It deserves maybe like a gong or something. You know, just a...
I actually coincidentally have a gong in the studio.
Okay, so here we go. It is the 300th show for DH Unplugged. It's still going.
It's astonishing.
It's still astonishing. You get the reverberation still going too in the background. So yeah. At the end of the show, we're going to have a special giveaway, a little challenge for our listeners, and we'll tell you all about that. At the end of the show, but it is something very special. 300, it's like, what, 6 years?
Jeez.
We, like, paved the way.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, while Adam is clearly, Adam Curry is clearly the pod father, we're like the grandchildren or something.
Yeah, the pod children.
It's like a bad horror movie. Anyway, it was the first week that was actually up this year so far. Last week, we had a couple of turnaround days. There's a good amount of chatter that the central banks are going to be doing something. They're having a announcement tomorrow at 2 o'clock on interest rates and direction and things like that. There was also a discussion about, well, man, maybe Europe's going to do something after Draghi had spoken. And then also maybe the Bank of Japan's going to do something. They'll add some stimulus. But I don't know about you, and this is something you talked about a lot. There's some kind of a change. There's a sentiment change in what people are thinking about what central banks can do and what they can't do. Have you been seeing that at all?
Well, I think, I know there's some resistance to the meddling.
Right.
And the European Central Bank in particular really wasn't very happy about getting involved with quantitative easing.
Right. But then once they caught on, they were all right to the punch and throw the kitchen sink in, plus everybody else's kitchen sink.
Yeah. I don't know that there's anything specific that I've noticed. What did you see?
Well, it appears that the last couple of times when Draghi spoke and when he said we're going to do everything that we can, whereas looking back the first time he said it, markets reacted incredibly positive. And it lasted for a period of time. When you saw that the Fed added stimulus or they talked very dovishly, and when the Bank of Japan did something, and when the People's Bank of China.
Oh, right. I know what you're saying.
And now
it has reversed. It changed.
Yeah.
It went from positive to negative.
Yeah.
So when people initially heard, quantitative, that's great. It's going to prop up the market. Everything's rosy. It's terrific. And then after a while, it became, well, maybe we should raise interest rates because things are going well. And then they said that. Then they go back to, gee, this doesn't look like it's working out. Now the reaction to it is, oh my God, you mean this? It should have been recovered completely by now. This is bad.
Right. Not doing the trick.
Right. It's not doing the trick.
Yeah. So I mean, we can't get
even though it is doing the trick. It's not doing the trick.
Well, it did. It did inflate asset prices from the perspective of stock markets. And obviously helped out bonds. But the problem has been that it hasn't helped out inflation, which was their target. That was the target, employment, but also inflation. And they just cannot get it going. As a matter of fact, I mean, we've seen probably one of the worst, if not the worst, cut down in commodity prices in history.
Yes. Yeah, deflation is increasing.
Right. So something's not right. So I guess people are thinking that they need to do something different.
Well, the thing that amuses me is that even when the very beginning of this 300 shows, we discussed this.
Yeah.
It was when the days of the quantitative easing began, everybody, all these experts, mostly talk show people, not dissimilar from us, went on and on about, oh my God, hyperinflation is coming. We're going to have hyperinflation. And we got no inflation.
Yeah. I mean, for a little while, there was in a few countries, but generally, you look at Venezuela.
Yeah, but those countries are singular. They had their own issues.
Exactly.
Venezuela, I think, is one of them.
Yep.
And a couple of countries in Africa.
Right. Zimbabwe.
Yeah, always Zimbabwe.
Always Zimbabwe. The poster child for inflation. is Zimbabwe. Now, at the same time, several big firms are changing their price targets for the year end on the 2016 for the S&P 500. We've seen several major players, Goldman and Citi, and a few others. Now, JP Morgan was the latest to move their numbers from 2,200 was their number and their prediction and expectation for the end of the year 2016 on the S&P 500, which is now trading at about 1870, I guess. They moved it down to 2,000 by the end of 2016, which is, I guess, about a 7% move from here.
Huh.
So now I did some quick calculations and I said, well, right now we're at about 106 to 110, depending on how this fourth quarter plays out with earnings for the S&P 500. Expectations are for about 125. So let's back that off a little bit because we're not going to see a 15 or 18% growth year over year with what's going on right now. So let's just back it off ever so slightly to about 120, saying there's still pretty good growth, okay? And put the same PE on that's on now, which is about 17, and we get about 2040. So that's not too far off from what JP Morgan is calling for.
Mm.
Now, if that's if we do have this 10% growth rate of earnings for the full year 2016, which means that oil has to stabilize and possibly come up, because otherwise the energy sector is going to be negative again. That means that, generally speaking, we have to see that the global landscape also stabilizes, because already we're seeing that earnings have been falling. So what makes us think that we're going to turn around and see a gain, especially if we're looking at you know, gains over the last few years and then just slowing down a little bit now? So I'm not sure what is going to actually come about that's going to make for a 10% gain for the end of the year 2016. I don't know.
I just think this is a moment of craziness.
Yeah. Well, it's
I'm surprised that the dollar has not fallen more, improved more.
Yeah, it's I think it's about 99 and change. It still hasn't crested that 100 and a little over 100 that it did, I guess, a few months ago. It's just kind of hanging in there.
With the dollar?
Yeah.
It's 108.
Well, 108 against the euro, but I'm talking about the basket. I'm talking about the basket.
Oh, no, that's different.
Yeah, the basket was over 100, and that's as strong as it got. And by the way, and oil was higher then than it is now. So, you know, if the dollar does move higher, we're going to see some further problems with oil. As a matter of fact, oil, I'll mention that there was just a tremendous rally last Friday, about a 9% move on oil in one day, which is pretty big, especially in these days.
Yes, it's ridiculous, actually.
Yeah. This is after it was down a couple of days before that, of course. But now we saw that yesterday oil was down. It was up again. And then today it was down like a little bit after it kind of did fly for a while, because after the close of the markets today, Tuesday nights, we get the API, the American Petroleum Institute's numbers on their inventory builds or their drops on Tuesday night. And then we get the final on the Department of Energy puts out one on Wednesday mornings at 10:30. So the one that came out tonight after the close of the markets was for 11.5 million barrel build, which is enormous from last week. From last week.
That's the inventory?
Yeah, the inventory build was 11.5 million barrels.
Wow.
In 1 week. That's a lot.
The market's not absorbing this very fast.
No, not at all. I mean,
what do you expect with these high-efficiency cars?
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Electric vehicles, hybrids.
Well, plus they're pumping. They're not slowing down. They're pumping. The producers are not slowing down. Then we got the 500.
When does it top off? And what happens if it tops off? In other words, all storage is full.
It is full. Everything is full.
Well, what do they do with this stuff? I think
they pump it right back in the ground, I think.
I guess they have big holes that put it in.
Yeah, they just kind of like just pump it down and pump it around and pump it down and pump it around. This is a bit, and by the way, there was some more of those. Well, it costs more to have like a salmon, or I think it was like a can of salmon or something, like a salmon or a can of crab meat is more expensive than the barrel of is more expensive than a barrel of oil now. And like a salmon is more expensive than, I don't know. There's some weird things out today. It's a running thing that people are trying to make up, you know, what's more expensive than. But Now, China continues to be the target of selling. We saw that a 6% drop in the Shanghai index again last night as People's Bank of China not trusted. Big flight of money out of the country. As a matter of fact, this whole big issue about China's currency and the need to devalue the currency by 10, 15, 20%, maybe even 50%. George Soros was all over it. The People's Bank went directly after Soros and said it will be a very big mistake if you bet against the currency. So they're putting kind of they're putting it out there that they're going to fight this, or at least try to appear that they're going to fight this.
Huh.
And we saw the capital controls have been added, and we see them little by little, more and more is added to the capital controls. Like it's only a certain amount of money is allowed to be transferred from their currency, that currency to other currencies or the U.S. currency, and only certain amounts of money are allowed to be actually taken out of the country. So they're trying to hold on to this because there's a massive outflow. And the People's Bank of China and the government have spent like, I think, close to $600 billion of their total reserves, which is a significant multiple of that, but I think it's $3.5 trillion, to try to defend their currency. So how long do they keep that going?
I don't know. They can't keep it going forever. That's almost a futile thing to do.
Right, and they're just going to
end up losing your ass.
Right. So now one of the things they've done is one of the things we know they're doing is they need to hold on their money so they're not stockpiling anymore. As a matter of fact, there was I thought this was unbelievable. China is targeting further cuts in crude steel production and the capacity of that, so how much they're going to stockpile, as much as 150 million tons per year, and they're going to cut their coal output. So they lowered their steel production by 90 million tons in recent years, and they'll push for another 100 to 150 million tons while controlling, quote unquote, strictly controlling steel capacity and new coal mine approvals. So this whole thing is kind of crashing down around them. Don't you see it? I mean, isn't it kind of all piling in?
Well, it looks like it.
Yep.
I don't know what they're going to do.
And then on top of that, people don't believe the Chinese data anyway, right?
Right. So you have to assume, because of the nature of the Chinese data, that they're trying to paint the rosiest picture possible.
Right. So now, on top of not all this data that looks bad, on top of the fact that we think that their data is possibly massaged just a little, the Communist Party's Anti-Corruption Commission announced that it was looking into the head of the current country's statistics agency called
for a scapegoat.
These guys are unbelievable, aren't they?
Yeah, they'll find some poor sap.
Yep.
And then they'll hang him.
They'll hang him in the streets. This is what happens. This is what happens.
Did what you told me to.
Yep. Yeah, it was terrible. He said 6.8%. It's really 7. We're really at 7. How did he come up with 6.8% GDP? He was obviously not counting things and trying to make us look bad. So big problems in China. And then also, we'll get to this in a minute, but there's a few companies that have been reporting and have been commenting on the recent slowdown, particularly in the last couple of months, that have been building in China and Hong Kong, and particularly in Hong Kong. So things are not good over there.
No, This is not good.
Yep. Now, I did some calculations tonight. I thought this was kind of interesting. Markets have been following crude in correlation to the market movement on a daily basis and the movement of crude oil on a daily basis in 2016. But we only have a few data points, right? Only what, 15 or so days?
Yeah.
To look at. But there's been a 95% correlation of the moves in the S&P 500 to the moves in oil, or the moves in oil to the moves of the S&P 500. That's pretty high, when usually you see only about 50%.
Yeah, that's very high.
And now I went back actually even further into when you do it through December till now, it's about an 85% correlation. Now, when you go back about a year, it's only about 55%. The beginning of the year, there was really...
So what would make the correlation change?
It's gotten to a point that the drop in the price of oil has now started to, the problem in the oil industry and the price of oil has now infected other areas. So for example, one of the things that's happening is that the bonds are very suspect and distressed in the area of oil, and that's now hurting many areas of and cities that rely on, like North Dakota, Texas, Pennsylvania. Then you also have the banks that hold the debt of these oil companies. So now the banks are getting infected. It's kind of like the subprime situation if you think about it, right? So at first it was, okay, it was the housing issues. The banks were still solid. Everything was fine. Everybody was paying off and it was good. Then all of a sudden the property prices started dropping and banks were kind of getting hit a bit. But then all of a sudden it got severe enough that the banks actually got hurt and they started to bleed because now they're all of a sudden their earnings were under attack. If you look at the prices, we talked about this last week. If you look at some of the prices of the banks and the charts of the financials, it looks awful. They're the worst performing sector this year. I think they're down like 17%. Even worse than I think of, well, maybe materials is number one. But I think financials.
A lot of bank insiders are buying their stock.
Right, because they're down pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, moving along. All right, so this week is the biggest week for earnings. See, about 150 companies in the S&P 500 are reporting this week. So far we've had a bit of a mixed bag. Amazon's on Thursday. We have just all sorts of companies coming out. Some of the materials companies have done a little bit better, so it's popped their shares up. That was good. We saw that Apple came out with their earnings.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about some of the details of this?
Well, the only detail that stuck out to me was the net number of phones is down.
Yeah, the iPhones.
And then Apple came out with a statement saying, claiming, and I don't know what they're hoping to get out of this, but they said, and I think I understand part of it. They said, well, you know, only 60% of the, or less, maybe the number's higher. Only 60% of the users of the older iPhones have upgraded, as though it's like an upgrade cycle.
Hmm.
When this is not, to me, an upgrade item.
Right, the halfsies are not an upgrade, right?
Well, none of them. I don't think if you have an iPhone 5,
yeah,
do you need an iPhone 6 or do you need an iPhone 6S? I mean, that'd be two generations since the iPhone 5. The iPhone 5 are quite a remarkable, a pretty little thing.
I think the whole numbers, if you consider the S's a half, I think the whole numbers are a good upgrade. For example, when I had the 4, I didn't get the 4S, but I went to the 5, and I didn't see that much of a difference in the 4S, but the 5 was definitely better. The 5 to the 6, which I have now, I don't have the 6S, the 5 to the 6 was a major increase in speed. The screen size was a little bit bigger, a little more clumsy to get used to. But my
speed, what do you need? Let's stop. What is the speed factor that's so important to you? Was it dial faster?
No, as a phone, there was, well, I don't know if this is, I don't think this is actually associated with the 6 or 6S versus the 5, but there are all of a sudden certain phones, and they come online, it seems to be on a regular basis, more and more people that I call, the clarity of the call is unbelievable. Now, I don't know if I'm going over Wi-Fi or something or what's going on, but the clarity of the call is just remarkable. It doesn't sound like a phone. It sounds like a digital connection that's really crisp and good, like they're next door.
And this is through one of the networks.
It's
you don't know. You said yourself you think it might be Wi-Fi.
Yeah, maybe Wi-Fi. I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure what's going on. But for a while, for example, I called my parents. We're talking and all that. And then one day I call my parents. I'm like, what happened to the phone? It sounds fantastic. They're like, I don't know.
Could have been improved. They could have better speakers, better microphone.
No, I don't think it was the phone. I think it was the connection, but I think it's because you can do a cell phone over Wi-Fi or something they did with it. Now, I don't know if it's embedded in a particular phone or if it's the service. That's what I'm saying.
All right, well, I think you're going to have to find out more details before you make these claims.
Yes, okay. Well, but the point is that in terms of speed, okay, the size was definitely an enhancement, I thought.
Okay.
Because I would use, this is a good and a bad, I would use my five.
Oh, you got the big giant one?
No. No, I just have the six. But the difference I'm talking about, the difference from the five to the six.
Not the six giant.
No. And I don't think the 6S. I just have the six, I think. Maybe I have the S.
Now you don't even know what phone you have.
All right. You know what? I have the six.
This is embarrassing.
I have the six. But I because I don't usually, I won't go with the S's. You know, I won't go with the halvesies. But the size was
my
big.
Son,
size
I would big. Say this, my son who had a four forever and just rode it into the ground. He says they started falling apart almost immediately. It's very poorly designed.
What is?
Phone's not meant to last. He has a 6S now and he loves it. Yeah. He actually likes the phone. He never liked the four.
I like the six and the five. The four I didn't like either. The five was okay. It was good. I thought it was adequate. It was fine. But the bigger one, I found myself using it more and more for things that I'd use my iPad for. It was just big enough that it was, I could read things on it and I could, you know, kind of get around. There was enough screen space to do what I had to do. Versus the five was just slightly too small. Now that may be just my opinion. Listen, my wife, she has to wear reading glasses. So, you know, you look when she's texting somebody, it's like one word per screen, you know? She just makes the letters gigantic.
Hmm.
But, and she has the big phone, the big old.
The big clunker.
Table. You know, it's like a table phone. But anyway, here's a couple of the things that came out. So iPhones, you know, I saw that iPhones were, they hit 74.8 million versus 76 million estimates. So they matched last year. The iPads were 16.1, which was about 3 million less than estimates, and last year was 21.5 million. 5 million, a good, what is that, 30% lower? No, 20% lower, 20-something, 25%, yeah. IMAX, 5.3 million versus 5.7. So far, they've missed on all of those, right? Would you agree?
Right.
And they've actually lower than last year. Now, their actual earnings beat $3.28 versus $3.23. However,
how do they get their earnings so high?
Because they're doing massive buybacks. Revenue
this
is 70.
Was recommended to them by Icon, if I'm not mistaken.
Of course, because Icon wants to own the stock. And if they didn't do the buybacks, where would the shares be at this point? Now, the revenues missed also, $75.9 billion versus $76.6 billion. Their gross margins were better, about 30. Oh, actually, sorry, their gross margins were light now that I look at it. Gross margins were 39, about 39.5 versus 40 estimates and 40.8 last year. That's for second quarter. First quarter gross margins, they seem to have beat ever so slightly. So let's see what else there was here. The company issued downside guidance for quarter two, sees quarter two revenues of 50 to 53 billion versus 55 billion. So it's definitely 2 billion lower. However, Apple seems to sandbag quite a bunch.
Yes, which is a hard deal with.
There's also some inventory build issues that were a concern, but clearly on the conference call, the commentary about China was that they're really happy about China. They made all this extra money compared to the year before, but don't forget, they just started doing things there. However, Tim Cook commented on how there was a clear slowdown occurring that they're seeing now in China and particularly in Hong Kong in the last like 3 or 4 weeks. Now, to see a slowdown in just a few weeks must be pretty substantial, don't you think?
Yeah, I would think so. Unless they, you know, I'm kind of surprised they dog it that closely week to week, but I guess you have to.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty surprised.
I still think the time to bail on Apple is when they start closing stores.
You don't think that the markets will be ahead of that?
Well, no, the markets might be or might think they're ahead of it, but I seen that, you know, this Apple thing, you know, do the dipsy do quite a few times and they missed the mark. I mean, they might.
Well, the big issue is also, you know, you're right about the upgrade cycle and the people that are going to be upgrading. It's like anything else. You may make a great product that doesn't have to be upgraded necessarily. And the problem is people buy it and you get incredible amounts of money from it and make just a ton of net profits. The problem is then, you know, it's the second side of it. It's when, you know, when are the people going to upgrade and what's your next product out? Because when you look at the rest of it, they're happy about their Apple TV. They're kind of happy about their watches, which they don't talk about what their earnings are on the watches, you know, but they say they're happy. Their music business supposedly is doing better. That's where they're going to really push. it was interesting because they talked about how they're pushing the services part of their business, which I guess is apps, I suppose. I mean, I guess they separate maybe service from product.
Wouldn't service also be the stores?
But that's sales. What do they don't charge you for anything, do they, in the stores?
No.
So I think it would be just product sale. And then they have Apple Music, TV, movies, things like that. So they're really going to try to put a push to that. But Apple was down about 2.5% after the close. Finally, it kind of held up throughout the entire conference call till the end when the analysts were asking all the questions. And then it dropped down about $2.50 to, I think it closed at $97.42 on the close of the after-hour session. So you put that into the mix, which is going to, if it does stay there, if Apple is down 2.5%, that will be about 40 basis points, about 0.5% on the NASDAQ. The Dow will also get hurt because, of course, this is a Dow company now, Dow Jones Industrial Average. That will take down the Dow, maybe 40 points. And then we'll see how that plays out. But you also have the oil issue. If markets are following oil was down about 3% after the close. Now, Twitter has been in the news. A lot of things going on here. Big management changes out of nowhere. Twitter announces, and Jack Dorsey announces, hey, you know what? We're firing like four of the major players, the heads of all sorts of departments like marketing. And this was on Monday, and the stock took a hit because everybody's like, what are you doing? Now, all of a sudden, you're going to leave this company. Like when there was no CEO, you got to leave the company without anybody running this deal. It's already sinking. Twitter trading at about $16.95, just right off the all-time low. And then he announces today that they're putting the, as the chief marketing officer, they're replacing with American Express's Leslie Berland. Now I'm thinking to myself, have you seen American Express lately? Stocks in the toilet. Company is bleeding everywhere, losing all sorts of advertisers, losing all sorts.
What is American? I always wonder about this. I see this happen a lot in this Valley companies. These are very singular, screwy operations in so far as how they relate to, in so far as comparisons concerned, to old style corporations that are big, small, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're different. It's so different that you really need to have some people that are in the industry, it seems to me, that understand it, or at least the social marketing part of it. And I just don't see American Express being a social marketing company that knows anything about this sort of thing. And why? What is she going to bring to the table?
It's kind of like bringing the head of marketing from Stanley Tools to Twitter. You know what I'm saying?
Pretty much the same thing, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, because they say they're a marketing person.
This is subscribing to the idea that marketing is marketing.
Right, exactly.
This is the journalist thing. We noticed this in the journalism business. It's always caused a problem. The journalism schools cranked that. Journalism is journalism. Journalism means that you know how to ask questions. You know how to do this. You know how to do that. You can write about anything. Go write about technology. Go write about the automobile industry. Go write about aviation. And you don't know anything about these topics. And so you go in there, you can ask some stupid questions, but it doesn't really give anybody any insight. And I'm reminded of Aviation Week, which used to have a rule that the editors and all the writers had to have private pilot's license and be involved in the business.
Is that right?
Which is a lot different than what they do in the tech game, where you have just anybody, but just got out of college and now they're writing about tech. They don't know anything.
Right, and then...
And this is the same thing with marketing.
But the point, let's kind of dig down to this. Here's the point. If you don't know anything about the subject matter that you're dealing with, the problem is you're not going to ask the right questions. And if you ask the right questions, even if you did happen to stumble across the right questions and you get an answer, you're not going to know if that answer really is some bullshit or it's just something that is really should be followed up on and further explored, right?
Yeah, right. You have not developed any bullshit meters.
Right. So what's
happening? I don't know if it's bullshit. You get bullshit. And that's what they do. These guys are... That you talk to, they bullshit you. They love doing that. Oh, what a dummy!
Right, and then the problem is that they do I have a story for you? And all it is a company fed PR piece.
Right,
that's all it ends up being. So now this again, American Express, though, getting back to this for a second, they definitely have a marketing problem. Okay, the company has been losing market share like there's no tomorrow. The last earnings sent the stock down 12%. When's the last time you remember hearing American Express, a Berkshire Hathaway owned company, is down 12%? Well, not owned. They don't own the whole company, but they own a big piece of it.
They own a piece of it.
Yeah. So, you know, Warren Buffett's always been behind this, which I really found interesting. Why is Warren Buffett continue to be behind American Express, which clearly has been beat by, I guess, by Visa, MasterCard, no question, right? But also the PayPals of the world and all the other players out there, and has always been a big question mark for merchants who have to pay a lot more or used to have to pay a lot more to use that product, right?
Yeah, 4%, up to 4% as opposed to 1.5 to 2.5.
Right. And then on top of it, he's involved with IBM, which is a serial disappointer and has been losing market share, has been losing revenue, and the only thing they have going for it is a massive buyback program. Why does Warren Buffett, this really smart guy, I just don't get it. Why is he in those companies? Just because, well, he put a stake in there and he has that and he had a lot of money that he made on those companies, so he just stays with them? And what's the logic there?
He doubles down. And Berkshire Hathaway just bought a lot more of Phillips 66, the oil and gas refiner, which has dropped from about, 90 or something down to 70, 77.
So he can't find another better company? He just stays with what he has? I mean, just don't bother spending the money on research?
This is to the tune of $55 million.
That's all it was, $55 million, that's it?
Well, it's...
That's not a lot of money for him.
That's a lot of money, as far as I'm concerned, to put into the oil business.
Yeah.
At this point, why don't you just wait?
Yeah. So anyway, Twitter brings on American Express's Leslie Berland. Let's see what Twitter did today. Twitter. It was down slightly today. So hopefully, this will be a big move. I don't know who they're going to bring on for their other positions. Again, possibly somebody from, Taco Bell or something. I don't know. Some other position that has no relation to it. But what was really interesting, you and I have talked about how when I flip through Twitter, I see a couple of ads here and there. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah, you've said that. I've never seen ads.
Right.
And unless there's something, they embed a few things, I guess.
Well, what I did was every time that I saw an ad, I would click it and I would say, there was things you could say like, I don't want to see this tweet. It's not relevant. Tweet is offensive. I always click tweet is, the tweet is offensive. All of a sudden, starting about last week or so, I'm noticing, or maybe a little bit further back, where are all the Twitter ads? Where'd they go? I don't see anything. So there's a story out of Recode, Karen Swisher, the sunglass lady, it says that Twitter has stopped showing ads to some of its most valuable users.
That's odd.
I don't know if they were...
Aren't the valuable users the ones you want to send the ads to?
I would think you'd want to have the ads to the people who have the greatest potential to retweet and... who are real power users of the application. So,
okay, I have to stop you for a second because I just did a lookup of that woman from American Express and LinkedIn. Look at her background.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I see what the angle is that they were looking at.
Blonde hair.
She started off as a public relations woman.
Mm.
Anyway, so she is the PR woman for American Express. That's how she left one of the agencies. And then she went from PR woman to vice president of social media strategy, which I think is what she's hanging all this on, and that's what she probably pushes.
That's the tie-in.
That's the word I'm looking for. Words. Social media strategy. And she went to digital partnerships, SVP, and then executive vice president of digital partnerships and development. So she's got this digital thing in there. So she's the digital expert. So I decided to... as we're discussing this, look her up on Twitter. And
she better have a lot of followers.
No. I've seen this from so many of these so-called
oh, God.
Experts. I think, let me get her followers. Exact number. If I can find.
Over 10,000?
I don't know if it is. I think it's like 8.
Actually... the question would be, if she's working for the company, it's one thing. Her personal followers is how many American Express has following them, because that's her job.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It's specious to just point at her. But if she's the expert, you think she'd jack up her followers, you know, if she had the skill set.
Or if just buy them.
Well, you could do that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these people don't know you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's how she got in there. So she used that leverage to get over to Twitter, I guess. And she's probably pretty good at sales, and she's very attractive.
Oh, see, now there's something.
Yeah.
Is Jack Dorsey married?
I don't know.
Hmm.
With that beard, I doubt it.
I think he cut it, didn't he?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't really keep that close to tabs on him.
Crazy stuff. There's some other really weird corporate stuff going on. For example, T-Mobile. John Lagarde, who is the crazy but very effective CEO. Very good on social media, by the way. I had to stop following him because it was too intense. You don't usually see a CEO slamming other companies like he does, whether it's AT&T or Verizon, Sprint. So this is what he did this week. He had a kind of a new twist on the whole idea of let's have a fun time during earnings calls, and especially if they're not ours. So Verizon came out with their earnings call, and he created a Verizon earnings call drinking game. So what he did was he encouraged anyone who tuned in for the company's quarterly investors webcast to take a drink of any beverage of your choice anytime Verizon mentioned the words millennials or young people. Trying to get, I guess the whole idea is that he believes that he's much more in tune with it, and Verizon is an old line company that has no idea what they're talking about. They're using it only to spice up the earnings conference call.
Yeah, buzzword.
Yeah. So he had a few other things he did also, like something about earnings and something, a couple other words he used also. Create a drinking game. How weird is that? Right?
It's funny.
It's funny, but I mean, from an executive, it's almost, it's on the edge of so unprofessional. It's like hard to believe, but.
Yes, it's very, I would say it's not on the verge. It's unprofessional.
It's terribly unprofessional, right? But from him, somehow it's acceptable.
He's one of those goofball, modern CEO goofballs.
Yeah. It's kind of like when Donald Trump says stuff that you just know is not true, but you just give him a pass anyway because you just know it's not true.
He's a goofball.
Yeah. By the way, a couple things about Donald Trump. It seems that he and Ted Cruz are going to have an unmoderated...
No, this is not happening.
This is the news story I saw tonight. An unmoderated debate.
That's not going to happen.
How great would that be?
It would be great, but you know, Trump has dropped out of the Fox debate.
Yeah, what was that about? That's surprising. That's on the Fox debate especially that he dropped out. Why did he do that?
Well, a couple of things. One, he doesn't like working with Megyn Kelly. But the main thing was Fox sent out a kind of a satirical press release, which ridiculed him in some offbeat way. And that, as far as he was concerned, that was the end.
That was the last straw. Meanwhile, he can ridicule himself all he wants on the Jimmy Fallon show. That's
funny. Yeah, I mean, he goes on Fallon. Yeah, right, he does. You know? He puts up with the craziest stuff on Fallon.
Right.
And Fallon, I don't even think, likes him that much because he doesn't say anything positive when Trump's not around.
He seems to be quite liberal.
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah. Now, Michael Bloomberg, speaking about the presidential race, Michael Bloomberg stated that if, in fact, Trump and Sanders get the party nominations, that he's going to be throwing his hat into the ring.
Yeah, he's going to run as an independent.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to have some problem with people with the whole, you know, soda. You know, you can't have a
lot. Oh, no, he's not an appealing person. I don't even know how New York ever re-elected him over and over.
Yeah. Well, he's got the money behind it. I mean, he's got 9 times or 10 times the wealth of Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's bloated.
I was hoping that if he gets elected as president, maybe he'll give all of us free terminals, Bloomberg terminals. That'd be awesome.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, that'd be great. Or maybe just lower the price ever so slightly from $2,500 a month to maybe something a little bit lighter.
Yeah, 99.
Yeah. Exactly. $99 a month for the time I am. Listen, I'll vote for him for that. I'll be honest with you. Now, here's a story that you don't come along across very often. It's back to China again. 35 restaurants across China have been found illegally using opium as a seasoning in their food, particularly in these hot pot restaurants. I think I told you about when I was in China, I went to all these hot pot restaurants where they give you, it's like Japan has something called shabu shabu. Here we call it kind of fondue, where you
dip. Yeah, it's a pot of boiling oil or boiling water on the table, and you cook with it.
Yeah. So I guess they had as one of the things for an extra cost, maybe it's, you know, $20, $30, whatever it is. Instead of the salt, pass the salt, you know, pass that little opium and sprinkle it in your food.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That sounds great.
How great is that? 35 restaurants they found that were, it says 35 restaurants have been found illegally using opium as seasoning in their food. Like, is there a particular legal way of using opium? Legal
way to do it, yeah.
I don't know. So that was kind of cool. If anybody wants to check it out, go to the hot pot restaurants in China, I guess. Now, Oprah also, just like you predicted, by the way, Oprah tweeted today that she lost 25 pounds on the Weight Watchers diet and still ate bread. Guess what happened?
The stock went up.
Stock went up 17%.
Jeez.
So, I mean, I guess it's 25 pounds, a lot of weight in the time period she was doing it. But, I mean, got to admit that she just had to drive a stock up if she's going to do it. I mean, listen, if she's a yo-yo with her weight all these years, why not? What better way?
Oh, yeah. Up, you go up, short it,
yeah.
Get fat.
Right. We just got to put
the thing sink and then start losing weight again and go long.
We got to find a paparazzi that will follow around, and we'll just like kind of do some kind of a estimation of her weight and
work. You could do a newsletter. Yeah. Oprah's big butt. Just take pictures of that, and then you
go
long and go short.
Right.
Puts and calls.
Yep. Final thing on China is that the SAT exams are available in China, which I don't know why that is, but I guess it is. But it seems that this future of the standardized tests are now in disarray again because there's been further and renewed fears of widespread cheating in China.
Yes, because the tests are probably freely available. Or the answers. You just bring the answer sheet in with you.
Right. And then I did some other more research, and I found this was kind of interesting. More information on the extension of car loans and car loan terms.
Yeah.
So Experian is saying that loans with terms of 73 to 84 months accounted for nearly 28% of all new vehicles financed in the third quarter of last year, up 17% from the same quarter a year ago. And also they're finding that more expensive cars are having longer loans. So people are saying, let's see, $400 a month used to buy me, a Toyota Prius or whatever the Prius is. Now for $400 a month, I can get a Mercedes, but I just have to go 8 years.
8 years. Well, they last 8 years.
Yeah. So
but I can't imagine what the total expense is.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that it's locking people in underwater in a car for a longer period of time, meaning that if it is any problems with employment or inability to pay, these car companies are going to have a big problem. And on top of it, subprime car originations jumped about $40 billion in the second quarter of last year. So you're seeing a lot. Now, they put a chart up here. You can see this on the show notes over on DH Unplugged. And you'll notice that the average loan terms, which is the blue bar from 2002 through 2015, this is actually through November of 2015. You're seeing that look at how the average went from about 60 months, which I find still amazing that in 2002 we had 60 months average car loan terms. Back then I was still thinking it was 3 or 4 years. And now
it's over 67.
Yep, it's like 68 months average. And look at also that the average cost per month has also been moving higher. How interesting is that?
It's crazy.
People are nuts with this whole thing. So what about that snow in New York, by the way, and in D.C. and all that? Do you think it's going to have any impact on retailers? You know, you had the retailers who...
every time it happens, of course it is.
Well, it's too warm
or
it's too cold.
Even though it lasts 3 days. Oh, ruined our quarter.
But what's interesting is it's the retailers complain when it's too warm because nobody's going to go out and buy a jacket, it seems. If it's too warm, and if it's too cold and they get bad weather, they're going to complain, well, nobody came to the stores.
Yeah, because it's too cold.
And this was bad, actually. During the week, Terry Lundgren, the CEO of Macy's, said, you know, we like snowstorms and things like that. It's really good for our shopping, which I guess. But he said, you know, hopefully it will happen on a Tuesday or Wednesday. If it happens on a weekend, that's not good. which is exactly what happened, right?
Why is it not good on a weekend?
I guess people go shopping on the weekends and they have a full day of shopping versus just half a day after work.
Okay.
So if they're not able to go on the weekends, it's a big problem. Hmm. And on a sad note, Abe Vigoda died.
Yeah, everybody seems to be running this as a story, it's including us, apparently.
Yeah, he's, you know, he was, what was his, he was, what, the sad, droopy Detective Fish?
Yeah.
Didn't they have a spinoff, too? I think he had a spinoff called, I think it was called Fish.
Maybe.
I don't think that lasted very well. I don't remember him in The Godfather. Maybe I missed that.
I think he was.
Yeah.
But I don't remember exactly who.
Now for the big reveal. You ready?
He was at 94 years old. So, you know, I thought he, you know, most people thought he was dead already.
I thought he died years ago, to be honest with you. I really did. For the big reveal, before we get to the stock picks of the week, it is the 300th show, right?
300.
I feel like we should have, you know, we are Sparta. We are DH Unplugged.
The 300.
Yep. We have a special giveaway, a special contest. You have to do a little work to do this here, but basically you go over to DH Unplugged. And there's going to be an image you can find on the show notes. Click down and open up the show notes. There's a little button that says, guess the amount of money in this image. And when you click that, like I'm doing right now, there's a bunch of bills and the collage of money. You have to guess how much money is in that picture.
Why don't you just count it up?
You could try, but maybe a little difficult. The first person to guess the exact, not close, we're not dealing with close here, the exact amount of money in that picture, which is going to be from the time you start hearing this show through 12 a.m. or midnight on Sunday, January 31st, which is Sunday next week or this week. The first person that gets it will get a $100 Amazon gift card. You got some bells, dings, something. You got a kazoo. You got a deer call. Do you have anything? Nothing? I'm looking for you for the sound effects here. We'll try it again. Yeah. Wait, hold on a second. Ready? We're going to do a timer. We're going to get an amazing $100 gift card from Amazon. There you go. There it is. What is that? Like a theremin?
No, it's not a theremin. I wish I had a theremin. It's called the Energy Stick.
Oh.
Just some noisemaker I got for Christmas. I always get a bunch of noisemakers.
My niece has a theremin. It's very bizarre.
You have a theremin?
Yeah, my niece does, yeah.
Is it one of the desktop ones or a real old-fashioned one?
It looks like a desktop thing with a big antenna.
Yeah.
Is that the newer ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's probably digital or something. I don't know.
You can buy them.
And you move your hand. There's
actually quite a few number of companies make them.
Hard to play. It's impossible to play. This is a child prodigy, by the way, who owns it. And
she can probably play it then.
Yeah, she could play it. And there's a limitation to it, obviously. But
Put me in touch with her. I need some songs done on the theremin.
All right, I'll mention to her. Let me write this down. Her name is Shelby. She's got accepted to some of the major colleges.
We'll run her music from the theremin on the No Agenda show.
Okay, I got it. All right, so what you do is you click on the link, you take a look at this. There's a form. Now, by the way, here's a little thing you need to know. You need to log in if you're currently registered ready on DH Unplugged to see the weekly stock picks, or you need to quickly register. Now, listen, let's get a few things straight. One entry per person. Okay, the earliest entry that gets it right wins. No funny stuff. None of this bot.
Well, they're
going
to have to register with it with their email address.
That's correct. But
then you probably have something that sends a notice to them to confirm the subscription.
That's correct. Yeah. So you, if you get there and you're like, well, where's the form? Where do I? You have to log in. Go to the top. We'll put I'm getting a little script run so you can actually log in right there. But you can log in and you just log in and you just put your pick in. So there you go. $100 Amazon gift card from John and myself, just because we love you. Isn't that right?
It sounds great.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, let's get to our stock picks. And this is a game that we play. This is not an offer to buy, not an offer to sell, not an offer to do anything. This is nothing more than a little game we play that we find some stocks that we think will be of interest. It is the heart of earnings season, so that's kind of interesting. Do me a favor. If you do pick any of these stocks, if you think about investing in any of these stocks, go do your research yourself. We take no responsibility for the millions of dollars you're going to lose if we don't get it right. So there you go.
That's probably the most blunt way of putting it.
Yeah. We have a much larger disclaimer on the website, but that's basically it. We only have three positions that are actually still kicking. Two of them are yours.
They're all green.
Yeah, they're all green.
Actually, even the ones you kicked out for green.
Yeah, we had one that was down. Trackon was down. Freeport, by the way, we got out of Freeport at 376. It's like four. It's back to 410 again, but it just dropped too much.
I think we're looking at the bottom of that stock.
It came out with earnings today. They were miserable, but the stock was up. I guess it wasn't as miserable as people thought they would be, but it was still miserable. I got stopped out of Yang for a 47% gain. That was
nice.
Three times short ETF. Best Buy, we were stopped out for a 14% gain. Avago is still live, which probably would do okay tomorrow with the Apple earnings and Apple down, if Apple does stay down. And you'll see the same thing with Intel as well. You're short in both those. Intel up 8.5% or 8.6%. Ardelex, Ardelex was like up, and then it just, as a matter of fact, I think it was today or yesterday, it was up like, 16-17%, and then it just got crapped out. But you still have 5.5% on that. That was the merger potential and all that you were looking at with these companies. So that thing was definitely moving. I have two picks.
Okay, I've got one.
I had three picks, and I took one off, actually.
What was the one that you took off?
Hell Merchant Paint again. Remember that, the oil service company?
Oh, yeah.
I just said, you know what? The oil stuff is bad.
Yeah, oil's too.
So Under Armour's coming out with earnings.
Who?
Under Armour.
Oh, that's Stephen Curry's sponsor.
Who's Stephen Curry?
The basketball player.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking Adam Curry. I thought it was a relation for a second. I don't know where I was for that. Sorry. Well, they sponsored.
No, the funny story, though, Adam went to New York, or I don't know when it was, like sometime last year, and he goes into a bar and he sees apparently it was a sports bar, and it had all these people wearing Curry jerseys.
Oh.
And he's wondering why. It was kind of confusing to him because he doesn't know anything about sports. What are they wearing? What are they wearing a jersey with my name on it?
They love me. They love me. They knew I was coming. So we're going to pick up Under Armour, which dropped off pretty dramatically. I mean, the big issue there is obviously that many of the apparel companies haven't been doing well, but the earnings are coming out. They've traditionally done pretty well. We'll see how that goes. JetBlue Airlines earnings are also coming out. Now, with oil as low as it is, JetBlue being one of the premier in the regional space, even though the economy is slowing down a bit, there could be an opportunity for them to really have a very nice quarter with the fact that they have such
a
tailwind.
Good call. Yeah, tailwind. Southwest would be good too.
Southwest is Save, or is it Love? LUV. LUV is their symbol.
LUV.
They've had some problems, actually.
What's their problems?
I don't know. The stock was just been all over the place. What do you have?
I've got Legg Mason.
Really? Legg Mason?
Yeah.
Let me think about it. What is the news? Did they come out with earnings or something? Something happened with Legg Mason. Why do you like Legg Mason?
Well, again, it's insiders. But this time, what's interesting is that there's not one, but three different insiders buying into Legg Mason over a period of about 2 or 3 months.
Really?
Yeah, three different guys, all directors, or I think, I don't even want to even be the chairman. Yeah. So I found that a little suspicious.
Right.
So I'm in long.
You're going by.
I mean, and again, if you look at the chart, it's not a bad looking chart. It fell off the cliff. I mean, it was up. The stock was up at 55, and it was dribbling down. It kept going down and down and down. When it got to 40, it fell off the table, and now it's at 29.75. It just, it just could be a $50 stock.
Well, the thing about Legg Mason, not that I'm convincing you out of this at all or saying anything like that, the one big issue would be obviously assets under management, and if depending on how markets do, has a big effect on them.
Yes.
Right. So, you'd hope at the same time a buy on Legg Mason to a degree is a little bit of a thought that markets are going to stabilize.
That's my guess.
Yeah. Let me just write that. Insiders.
Multiple insiders.
Multiple insiders. Okay. J, C, E, pick. Okay. What else you got?
That's it.
That's it. All right. Yeah. Well, everybody should go over and try to figure out what the amount of money is on our giveaway, because we're kind of like, I figure the DH Fed, you know, the Fed gives away all this money. That's what we're doing. That's what this show is all about today.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Yeah, we're just throwing money at you. We're throwing all sorts of money at you. The DH Fed, in honor of the Fed meeting tomorrow, which is probably going to show a lot of egg on their face. Speaking of egg on their face.
Think?
Yeah. Well, they stupidly put a rate hike in when they shouldn't have.
Jacked up the rates by 0.25. Yep. It doesn't amount to a hill of beans.
It does actually, if you multiply it out and you look at how much liquidity it removed from the markets.
Okay.
You know, I had a great brunch this weekend. Just an amazing brunch. And one of the things on the menu is this, I don't know, I can't resist this. First of all, it was just an amazing brunch with seafood and just food and food and food and food. And then they had a separate menu where you can order a la carte that was totally included. And one of the items was a fried chicken on a waffle top with a sunny side up egg. Oh,
that sounds decent.
Oh, with a little maple syrup on there. That was awfully good. That was like, I didn't eat the whole day.
I wouldn't think so, because
I had two of those, and plus the buffet, plus other.
Yeah, two of them. Were you on a boat?
No, it was on the water. Actually, it was a place called the Blue Moon Fish Company in Fort Lauderdale. One of the best brunches I've been to in a while.
Huh.
Really good.
I resist going to brunches. I actually don't like brunches. I find them to be old lady-ish.
What depends on the brunch? I mean, this was. Well, you had the unlimited mimosas. That's old.
Yeah, it's old ladies.
And or champagne or Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
It's not like they say, hey.
It all spells old lady.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, we got a single malt, unlimited single malt, Bloody Mary or champagne. That would be a little bit more.
Be a little more up.
Did I tell you about this single malt that I had that was really good? The Glen Morange 18.
Yeah, you mentioned this before.
Excellent. I got to get you a bottle of that. I'm going to send you a
bottle. Yeah, why don't you do that?
I'm going to send you a bottle of that.
Send me about. Be careful when you send it because it's illegal to send liquor.
It is?
Yeah, you have to pack it and then label it as vinegar.
Oh, that makes sense. And I have my new ice ball maker. You know, single giant ice balls.
I have an ice ball maker.
Yeah. Those are good. And I got the whiskey cubes.
Some sort of little kind of a gummy plastic and then you put the water in. There's got a hole in the top.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
I got that and I got whiskey stones.
Whiskey stones.
They're kind of some kind of a pumice something or other that's, you know, and you put it in the freezer and then you put three of them in a glass and you pour the scotch or the whiskey over it.
Oh,
and
it doesn't dissolve in the water.
Uh-huh.
Most whiskey needs a little water, so it's not a bad thing to put a little water in there.
All right, let's get this up and hopefully you of the audience and the listeners are going to be the happy winner. So get your guesses in there, get registered, and look forward to number 301 next week.
301, great.
All right, see you. Bye.
Adios.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.